We'll call the meeting to order and welcome our guests who are from Anchorage. We're going to school in Anchorage, I imagine. Sophie, would you like to give us just a rundown what the students are doing?
Okay, these are juniors and seniors from various high schools in Anchorage, brought here under the Indian Education Program in Anchorage. We have four chaperones here with them. I'm chairperson of the Indian Education Committee in Anchorage. Steve is one of our staff members, and Linda Gentlett is one of the parent committee members, and Pete is a counselor also. We brought them down here to study the state government, visit the Senate, the House. These students have never been to GNO. We've toured GNO, and we'll be going back today. Their assignment while they're here is to write an essay about what they've learned while they've been here, and we're going to put it in a booklet for them after they get there, along with pictures that they've taken, so that they can share their experiences with the other students.
Well, we'll go right into it. The first item of business this morning is 882, and we have a member of the administration here who would like to defend himself, I think. Couple of issues. Mr. Smith, would you, the question that was asked yesterday, I don't think was adequately answered, was why are we doing this? And I think I answered it because I said we wanted to do it.
That's an answer. If you recall when we discussed the log branding bill, we had testimony from people that were in the from Alaska Lumber Pulp and Sitkin Ketchikan Pulp, who said that they had mounted a salvage effort on stranded logs that they were unable to carry on because they came across these areas which were under state contract, but in which there had been no effective effort at salvage. But since they were under contract, they couldn't go in with their equipment they had on the ground to do it. And the representative of the State Forester's Office at that time indicated that they did have some long-standing contracts for salvage, but that there was no, there was not necessarily any effort to make them carry on with the salvage operation. So Mr. Huntington and I, as you recall, became concerned about that, and this bill grew out of that concern. It's a requirement that in salvage operations there be a salvage effort made in order to keep the contract valid. Our thought being that if they do not make an effort to complete the contract will be canceled and be available for somebody else. The idea is we want the log salvage. We don't want the contract to be an item of speculation to be traded.
What's the answer?
My name is Bill Zufeld. I'm Southeastern District Forester for the Division of Lands, and I'm representing the Commissioner. And I'm glad I got an explanation, because that makes it that makes it simpler for me, I think. First of all, I hope that this committee is not using our present beach salvage program as a model of what we're hoping to do. Second, there are only about 10 beach salvagers actively salvaging timber in Southeast, and the areas, there are numerous areas, and there's, right now there is no conflicts between salvagers. In other words, they're not impacting the area. Third, the salvagers are selling timber. There are only two markets. They can either sell to the Ketchikan Pulp Company or they can sell to Alaska Lumber and Pulp. And the only thing that makes it feasible financially now is if they can go into an area and salvage state logs and also salvage logs, branded logs, on behalf of the pulp companies. So there shouldn't be any conflict between the pulp companies wanting to salvage and the beach salvagers. Beach salvagers only have authority to salvage below mean high tide and unbranded logs, abandoned logs. The pulp companies, the majority of their logs are branded, or, well, they are branded, and mostly above mean high tide, in which they have to go through the Forest Service to get authority to salvage. And while the Forest Service has not really given authority, they have just simply allowed them to go and salvage their own rocks. I guess what I'm saying is there isn't any conflict between the pulp companies and the salvagers. The salvagers are actually working on behalf of the pulp companies. We're concerned about this thing because we feel that the authority or the control to do what you're asking is already in our timber sale contracts. In other words, if a timber sale contract were issued, we would issue it for the time that was necessary to complete the salvage operation. It would be a performance condition of the contract, and there would be penalties to the contractor for not completing the sale on time. In other words, a lost advanced stumpage deposits, or what we're thinking about in Southeast is going in and determining the volume of timber that is in a particular area, selling it as a sale, lump sum sale, where the salvager would pay the entire value of the timber before he salvaged it. In other words, if he didn't salvage any logs, all the logs within the minimum period of time, then he would forfeit the money that he had paid for that timber he didn't salvage. In other words, I think, and again, I hope that you don't use our present beach salvage program as an example of what we want to do in beach salvage. The only reason we have continued that is because we knew you guys were on the verge of coming through with some kind of a beach salvage legislation that would allow us to offer a complete beach salvage program in Southeast. So we continued the state salvage contracts to keep as a service to clean up the beaches, and also to keep the operators in business until something could be done, since they had made equipment investments and so on. So something could be done in the way of offering a total beach salvage program. I think you realize that what we're thinking about is a cooperative agreement between the state and the Forest Service for a total salvage effort.
Chairman, Mr. Bogalka testified that they had a salvage operation going. I don't remember the location, but he had a cat and an arch on the beach, and they were moving it out at low tide, so it floated the tide, and they got so far down the beach and they had to quit, because from there on the area was under a contract to the state, which was a 3-year contract, and there had been no action on it for the past 2 years. Now, we aren't particularly interested in seeing the state make money from this. We're interested in getting the logs off the beach and getting them utilized. I think that the plans you're talking about, lump sum sale, are mistaken. I think that you should make a stick sale, use the count from the scaler or whoever buys it from the salvager. And for myself, I don't care if you make a penny. I'm interested in seeing those logs get cleaned off the beach and get to the mill.
The reason that we are thinking about lump sum is that when this thing comes about, if it comes about, we will have numerous beach salvage contracts all over Southeastern, and the ability to account for all those logs that are going to be removed from various locations at various times, all going to the same pulp company, is going to be a very difficult thing. It creates a problem of accountability. And it complicates not only the state's interest, which is going to be relatively small, but the Forest Service interest, which is going to be rather large, in accounting for all the logs that are being transported throughout Southeastern by rafts and barges. In relationship to the Ketchikan Pulp Company's having to stop at low tide, that is they are allowed to salvage logs.
You didn't understand me. I didn't say they stopped below tide. They stopped on an expansive beach that was under contract by the
right,
state
below,
already.
And that would be below mean high tide.
Well,
the whole thing
was stopped. They didn't log any further because they had no salvage contract past that point on the beach.
Well, I don't understand their concern, because the salvagers are either salvaging in the Ketchikan area, and most of them are selling their logs to Ketchikan Pulp Company.
The point is that the area where they wish to salvage was under contract to somebody else by the state.
Right. For the salvage of unbranded logs, which are going to Ketchikan
right.
Pulp Company anyway.
Right. But the contract was let to somebody else, not to the outfit that was there on the ground at the time.
Say that again. I don't understand.
The McGulka's outfit was on the ground in a given area. Adjacent to that area was an area that was under contract to some other outfit, some other salvager. So when he came down to this point, he couldn't log any farther, even though there were logs on the beach, had been there for some time, and the contract had been in existence for a couple of years, and the guys hadn't been in there to do anything on it. So that's what we're interested in stopping, is somebody tying up an area for salvage and not doing anything.
Well, first of all, he didn't have to stop, because he had authority to salvage his own logs within that area. Second thing is that
this was a salvager that was working for Ketchikan Pulp.
Right.
That's right.
Okay. He has no authority to go in and take unbranded logs off the beach.
That's right.
Okay. The unbranded logs in the area adjacent to where he was working was under contract to another outfit.
Okay.
So he had no authority to go in there.
I don't see the problem. I mean, I don't see the problem that he couldn't salvage unbranded logs in that particular area.
Because the state had already let a contract to do that to another outfit.
Yeah, but this salvager that you're talking about works for them. He salvages their logs and the state logs.
Well, you can't go in and sort on a beach. When you're salvaging, you got to take the whole smear.
Well, this is true, except...
And he can't take somebody else's logs, i.e. the state's logs, when they're under contract to somebody else.
Right. Well, he wouldn't be able to take them anyway, even if he didn't have them. Or you're saying if he had a beach salvage contract, he could have taken them all.
Right.
Okay, so if we issued them a beach salvage
but
contract...
But the beach salvage contract was already let to somebody else for that area.
Well, what are we going to do in the case of Ketchikan Pulp? Issue them a beach salvage contract for all of Southeastern where they're...
This law would say that you had to have a performance clause in your contract. That if they don't salvage, the contract's canceled.
When I first started talking about this, I said, I hope you don't think that this beach salvage program we're thinking about is going to be the same as what we're trying to hold on to now. In that, I think what we're going to do is determine the volume that's in this area and determine the time that's needed to salvage. In other words, salvaging beach logs, you're only going to have select months in the year to salvage. Okay, the contract is going to be set up to salvage within that period. And that's all the guy's going to get. He's going to get the opportunity, the time to salvage logs, to salvage the logs that you're selling.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's an excellent approach, and I suggest we give him a chance and postpone further action on this.
Well, the only problem I have was when we had the hearings on the log brand issue, the problem arose, as you described it, that people were dragging their feet, that there was no action, and people had been thinking about doing something for over 20 years. And they're still running into a backlog situation. And how are we to know that, we're not going to be faced with the same problem, say, a couple of years from now, that nothing happens again?
Well,
and you come back to the next resources committee and say, well, we've been thinking about, I hope you don't use this, our present system as a model and think that we're not going to improve our program. This
well,
can go on for another 20 years.
Yeah, first of all, we're not tying up. The maximum period that we issue a beach salvage contract is a year, and that's in the statutes. But we have issued them for a year because there isn't that much interest in salvage. In other words, these guys are not, there's only, like I say, maybe 10 guys that are salvaging. So there isn't any super conflict at this time or any great competition at this time. It may create a problem, as he says, for Ketchikan Pulp, where they want to salvage logs in a particular area and they can't get a beach salvage contract because someone has it. But in the end, these logs are going to them anyway. And the guy who is salvaging in that area is also salvaging their logs. I don't think Ketchikan Pulp has the capacity to salvage in all of the areas of southeast right now.
May I repeat our concern, Mr. Chairman? We're interested in getting those logs off the beach. We aren't interested in the state making a profit on them. We're interested in the state exercising authority to make sure that this conservation measure, which is what it is effective. We want the logs off the beach. We want them to the mill.
Well, I think that's our objective, too.
I'm sure that you do have the authority to do already what this bill tells you to do. And I think it would be a mistake if you didn't recognize our extreme interest in this issue and make some changes in your program.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rennie.
I don't agree with the gentleman at all, because they've been out here working on this thing for 30, 40 years here, and they haven't done anything about it. They carried it on the same status, same kind of contract, same kind of deals all the way through. And just because we're getting on them a little bit right now, they're going to change the law. They're going to change their way of thinking. But that doesn't change their way of thinking. You tell by the gentleman in his testimony here that he's disagreeing with us. Well, he can disagree with us, but we've got pictures right back there to show you all the logs. There's a difference in the number of logs laying on the beach now and what was laying on the beach 20 years ago. Two different sets of pictures. It's a tremendous difference in there. And as the salvager said, the Ketchikan Pulp Mill had brought a salvager in from the States, from Oregon. He went down the beach and he came to these areas where somebody had leased the land, the rights to salvage logs. And he came to that line, he had to stop. Well, those rights to lease are still sitting there yet. And this is 20 years gone by. This is the kind of stuff we've got to stop. And I think that we've got to pass this bill because I think there's nothing else will force them to do it. Because there's millions and millions of dollars worth of logs laying on the beach. If you want to keep sitting on it, you can sit on it and make rules and regulations forever, but it doesn't change anything unless you make a law. And the only thing I would settle for outside this bill would be a letter of intent from the Forest Department saying and stating that they would do the job as the bill intends them to do.
The important thing in the legislation as we have it before us is the performance requirement. And the committee has noted that there has been no action, and I believe that I wouldn't want to just let this thing sit. I'd like to see the bill move, and let the forester know that we are very much concerned that we're not going to allow waste of material that could be used for whatever purposes the lumber could be used for, and Mr. Smith and Mr. Huntington did some work and created the legislation based on the actual need. And derived out of the long-term hearings we had on the long brand issue. We held hearings last year and we held hearings this year, and nothing really has changed. Although I realize that your intent is noble, I think I'll recognize that, but I think the committee would want to insist that there is a performance clause.
I think one of the things that, in looking at this, is that everybody looks back and they say, well, all the logs are on the beach. It's obvious you haven't been doing your job enforcing the salvage. But the reason that all the logs are still on the beach is because there's a jurisdictional thing which you tried to solve in the bill that you passed recently, or passed out of committee. And that is above and below mean high tide. And that we don't have jurisdiction. The state really probably shouldn't even be in a beach salvage program right now until they have the authority to participate on the entire beach area via a cooperative agreement or whatever. But we are the only ones in the state who took an effort and took an interest in the salvage of beach logs. And the reason, and maybe we haven't done a great deal as far as the salvage effort, but the Division of Forestry is the only one who took an effort and made this beach salvage thing possible in an effort to do exactly what you're talking about. We're concerned also about performance and so on. And if there had been enough interest and enough salvage efforts, and we had enough jurisdiction to make a complete salvage program, then we would have gotten down to this point where we were selling timber like we do in other areas, not beach salvage, where the guy is given a specific time to perform it. But you have to gain interest as you're coming up with these programs, people are developing equipment, and so on. But to say that there's been salvaging for 20 years and that we haven't done anything is not really true, because there hasn't been, well, there has been salvaging for 20 years, 30 years, as long as I've been on the beaches. But no one has ever had the authority to put together a total beach salvage program. And the Forest Service has not, they're not interested in a beach salvage program that doesn't answer the complete package. So if we have been dragging our feet, it's because we haven't had the authority to put together a timber sale program to approach beach salvage. How can you sell logs that are below mean high tide that are there today, gone tomorrow? It has to be a flexible thing. The guy is working under rather adverse conditions, and it has to be a flexible thing there too. So this is the reason that we haven't approached beach salvage from a more intense timber sale program. We haven't had the authority to.
Well, Mr. Osterwood.
Mr. Chairman, well, I don't believe you'll ever have a beach salvage deal going if you're going to charge them the full price of the timber on the beach, when it's a big risk in there. They don't know if they're going to get it off, like you said, or drift away. And if we're going to follow that, the beaches will look the same 20 years from now, except there'll be more logs, new logs on top of the old ones. And the only way you can sell the logs, I think, in our bill, the way it read, correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be between the feds and the state, and they would get to sell them after they get them salvaged in some place where they know can count them or something. And I think if you do anything outside of that, you will never get it salvaged. You can't get anybody to salvage.
When we heard previous testimony from the U.S. Forester, now they stated that they were in agreement with House, the Committee Substitute for House Bill number 769, that there's a lot on this bill, and it does address the issue of performance, but it didn't spell it out very clearly. And the committee's concern, again, to restate it, is that the U.S. Forester also indicated that they were very anxious to enter into cooperative agreements with the state of Alaska to address the problem. But one obstacle that that we did not address specifically was the lack of performance in those leases that were granted by the state. In other words, an area of the beaches were tied up and in someone else's name, but the salvager who was available just didn't have the authority to go ahead and move as he would like to. So that's what we're addressing here, and I really think that the bill is necessary. Do you have any other comments to make, Mr. Zuka?
Well, I don't know if I can say anything I haven't already said. Repetitive, whatever. But again, we're not dragging our feet in the beach salvage program, even though it's dinging along. It's just that we're only salvaging a minute portion of the beach area. And the second thing is that this, I believe that this kind of thing should be answered through the administrative process, through in the timber sale contract and in preparation of the contract, where you determine the time that is necessary to salvage the timber, as we do in all of our contracts, and you allow the operator that time to salvage, and you don't give him an extension unless he proves that to you that there were attenuating circumstances beyond his control that he couldn't complete it within a certain time. Then you figure the time that he lost as a result of that, and you allow him that much of an extension. But this thing here, I think, is going to create problems also in the reverse, where the operator will say that because it was beyond my control, therefore I need I made a good faith effort, but I couldn't salvage, therefore I need an extension to the contract. So it can also go in reverse. And we have the control now in our timber sale program to do specifically this. But anyway, the concern you have is also a concern we have. And we have, you know, we have a, we grant timber sale contracts, or they're negotiated up to a year each salvage. And generally, we do not extend those contracts unless the operator has salvaged a significant volume of timber, and also if he has made an effort to salvage, and because of weather or something, then we generally only extend it for the period we figure that he can salvage what is remaining in his contract. But the confusing thing there is that we're dealing with logs below mean high tide, and they're moving in and out of the sale area, so it makes it rather difficult. But I can see your concern, and we're concerned too. The only thing is, I think the control is already there.
What is the wish of the committee?
I think you, the other guy in the state here that gave testimony, you're contradicting his testimony. He said that, I questioned him on it, and he said that the year, he's had a contract out on the beach for a year. Then they give him an extension for another year. He had some reason. Well, you can make reasons out of anything. This is what we've got to stop, this continuous extension. That's one thing that a performance bill like this will stop. We hope, anyway.
Well, then it becomes a determination in this bill. Did the guy make an effort? It's the same thing as granting an extension. It's the same consideration. In other words, this bill is going to do the same thing as when we send out a notice and tell the guy his sale is expiring, and that if he wishes to apply for an extension, he has to show that the reasons for completing the sale are beyond his, beyond his ability to, are being, beyond his ability to complete the sale from, not from his own operations, but from outside causes like weather. This thing here is going to force the timber sale operator to determine whether the guy made the effort, which means that in order to do that, if you have a 3-month contract, you're going to have to be there for 3 months and constantly watching this guy to make sure that he's making an effort to salvage.
Don't you manage the timber resource, and you, your job is to watch the timber anyway, isn't it?
Well, that's right. The only thing sure. is that we're
and if you get a, if you get a contractor out that sees the possibility of cleaning the beach from all the way from Kitsikan to Juneau, he's more likely to bring in the proper equipment to do the job and continue to work on it year after year. But if he's blocked by little blocks here and there, the choice pieces of land, the choice pieces of timber, salvage rights, then he can't do the contract. He can't do the job. See what we're trying to do? We're opening up somebody to get some equipment in there and clean this beach. I don't know how many millions of dollars, but the $20-30 million laying out on the beaches. You're going to continue to lay there as long as you let little blocks of choice blocks of salvage rights out to certain people that don't clean them, sitting on them for prospectural purposes only, hoping that somebody will buy the salvage right from them. Well, that's the thing that I think this bill will stop. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the bill out of committee.
You've got a committee subsequent for House Bill number 82. I don't know what the change is from the original. Mr. Van Dorn, did you?
Yes. The changes, Mr. Chairman, the changes that you have before you require that are satisfied, we tried to satisfy the problems that people had with the bill yesterday. Down toward the end, probably about line 20 to line 19, puts in a provision for a review. A final determination adverse to a person salvaging the timber or materials under this section may be reviewed upon filing of a petition for a review in the Superior Court within 10 days after notice of the determination. The second concern that was expressed yesterday had to do with extraordinary circumstances and the allowing the bill to work under the Administrative Procedures Act. Those were added in yesterday, and you have the language before you.
Is it, excuse me, is a motion to adopt the committee substitute, Ms. Hamilton?
Yes, ma'am.
You've heard the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the bill will move out of committee. How many do passes do we have? We got a majority. Thank you, Mr. Duffel.
Thank you.
Bill is House Bill number 828, an act relating to land under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. It creates a steering council that would be appointed by the appointments would be made by the Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, and by the Governor. And the duties of the steering council would be to develop a lobbying effort to represent Alaska's interests before Congress in matters relating to land withdrawals under 17D2 of the Claims Settlement Act. I don't know who put this bill in.
Mr. Chairman, this bill was introduced, I believe, by the Rules Committee by request of the Speaker, Mr. Pradner. I'll give you a little background if you'd like.
Yes, would you please?
Yes, in conversation with the Speaker, he was going to come down yesterday. I don't know if he knew that it was postponed until today or not. His purpose for introducing the bill was to set up the steering committee and to allow groups who may not otherwise be able to afford to go back to Washington and speak with their representatives back there, to allow the steering committee to make grants to them if they show that they have a interest in the proposed legislation that may come before Congress. It also, quoting him, would also allow a diverse group to go by. In other words, not everybody may agree with the governor's stand, or not everybody may agree with what the legislature's stand is. This would allow groups to go back and present another position if they so desire. And is mainly the purpose for setting up the steering committee was to provide some monies for these groups that otherwise would not be able to go back. There is an appropriation bill that accompanies this bill, which went directly to finance and not through our committee. Other than that, that's the only background I have for why it was introduced.
What is the price of the bill?
I'm sorry, Mr. Huntington, I don't have the appropriation amount. I believe it was $200,000.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Huntington?
It just kind of hits me funny, this bill here. I don't know if it would be the best interest of the people of Alaska. It would be the best interest of the people of the Order 48, no doubt about that, this bill would be. But I don't see it being the best interest of the people of Alaska. You start sending groups out, you know what the groups are, they're not going to be us. The Native of the Land Claims Act has had to pay for everything that they've got out of it, and they're still paying for fighting for their rights in Washington, D.C. I'm afraid when you start donating this money out to groups, I'd like to have Mike Bradner down here and explain the reason for it, and I'd like to question him on that.
Can I ask him if he's available? We'll have a 5-minute recess. Off the floor on House Bill 888.
I'm sure I hate to take you by surprise, but we've been waiting for quite some time.
Mr. Chairman, your assistant contacted me and indicated you were taking up the bill. I played with the idea, perhaps, of just suggesting we might lay it aside. And perhaps, then on rethinking it, I thought, well, maybe it's something that should be at least discussed with the committee. And as it's passed, the problem or the concept between more people, they may have some ideas about which way to go. The problem essentially has to do with D2 lands, which will be before the Congress, really not this year, but it'll begin to be germinated in the next Congress, and in the latter half of that Congress begin to reach fruition. And so in a sense, we have a year in which to work on the issue, but that's a year that can go by awfully quickly, and suddenly we find once again we're chasing after the horse after it's left the barn. Essentially, what I have been was trying to find is a way in which a broader group of people could get involved in developing a consensus on the D2 land issue, and one that would be broad enough also to realize that not all people are going to be willing to embrace the same specific proposal. It seems natural to me that you expect the executive government of the state to come up with a detailed, specific proposal. They are the executive government. They are charged with speaking with relatively one voice. Obviously, there's differences of opinion within their camp, but they have chosen to compromise those and begin to speak with relatively one narrow viewpoint. Mr. Chairman, we talked a number of times this session about how do you get the legislature involved and give a broader force to Alaska's expression before the Congress. And I think we both realize that for various reasons and differences in regional problems and others, it's hard to get a legislature to say, you know, the administration's position is our position. Rather, the truth of it is we like some of it, we don't like some of the rest of it, but we differ in the segments we perhaps don't like. And so you recognize it's a rather fragmented thing that you cannot exactly pull together in a single position. And so I began thinking, why does it have to be necessarily an exactly unified position that we would have the executive with his very precise position and create some other group that would try to gather consensus relatively close to that position, developing portions of it which the parties seem to have common agreement on, other portions where there is an agreement, but because you're working together, at least you're probably not working at complete cross purposes. The third part of the bill had to do even with the possibility of giving some of your adversaries money to go back and be represented. If I get the feeling that's coming from AFN and the regional corporations these days, it's that, well, we don't think what the governor's done is too bad. We'll walk along with you at a distance for a way, but don't expect us to embrace you on every point of your position, because we each have minor problems with that position in many different areas. I think that's a natural situation. Now, the regional corporations may be capable and financially able to present their own positions. In fact, they may be the most capable in going back to the Congress and doing that. But there's other parties who, left alone, will be spinning off in right field or left field. And it struck me that when you begin to build a forum, you offer some of your adversaries, you say, look, we know that you can't embrace our position, you ought to be heard, we don't object to you being heard, we'll even give you a small grant to be heard. My experience in those situations has always been is that people begin to move in, begin working closer with the center instead of going the other way. Now the Canadians do this type of thing. In the Northwest Pipeline hearings, many of the rural members here I'm sure are aware that grants were given to various Native groups to develop adversary positions. And somehow when you're given the wherewithal to work on a particular problem, you usually do a mature job of it. You don't have money, you don't have resources, your only recourse is often to stand back in the corner and throw whatever rock is handy, whether it's a rational or a sensible rock at all. And this is what this is driving. It's an area, an effort to try to put people together around probably one of the most important problems coming down the track for the state, without demanding that they be wedded to each other's positions in a precise manner. And my feeling is that I'm willing to bet that we'll all end up closer to some sort of a position, that we don't end up appearing to be completely fractured before the Congress. In fact, I'm not sure that Mr. Congressman wouldn't be very respectful of the fact that you even brought back some of your adversaries, whether they're mining or some rather small environmental groups that cannot work through the larger ones on the other side. And I'm not suggesting that those that the grants necessarily be extreme. Mr. Chairman, the bill before you is very imperfect. There might be other avenues for doing this. A specific new charge might be simply given to the Land Use Planning Commission. Suggest that they give the grants and do the job, and that, by golly, the Land Use Planning Commission is the Land Use Planning Commission, and they ought to be the focal point. There's some concern in my viewpoint that that may be viewed as being just too synonymous, perhaps, with the governor's position. I think if that bears some thinking. But other than the Land Use Planning Commission, after thinking and feeling that we ought to take some responsibility in the area, this was just about the best I could come up with. If you think I'm satisfied with it, no. I just felt that this is as far as I could go. I'm a little baffled by the question, feeling that it's an area that politicians can find a rather ticklish one to get into, because you can turn and say, well, it's the government, the executive's responsibility. You often turn away, let him make the decision, and just be his critic. In this case, I think the stakes are a little too high. I'd like, hopefully, to see more of us get involved. Questions?
Mike, I think it's a very good bill. Maybe some wording needs to be changed in it, but the concept I really believe in. I think you've done a good job on that. The thing that worried me is a little bit is what groups are we talking about? What worries me is that certain groups have more power than other groups, and although they claim to be broke, they're not broke. I think there might be some abuse in that. Right. And I was just wondering if it'd be possible somewhere to insert certain amount of use per group, or type of group, or something like that. I don't know if you want to do that or not. Now, the second thing, first thing that had me worried, and that worried is that I don't like the concept of the way the membership is taken. The administration points three from the governor, from the House now, I mean from the staff. Then the governor appoints two more, but the House of Representatives appoints one member from the House. I wouldn't mind the House of Representatives appointing a speaker, appointing a person. But I don't really think it should be from the House. I don't think the speaker from the Senate either, a member of the Senate. Those two things, because one thing, me being an independent, I certainly would never be on the group. No way, you know. It would be discriminating against me, for one thing. And I would like to see the speaker appoint a member at large, you know, from somebody with the consensus of the House. That I would like to see, if you didn't object to that. Outside of that, I think the intent is very good.
Generally, the reason the presiding officer appoints is that the House is elected every 2 years and things turn over and new members sometimes have to be appointed or people resign, after sessions or drop out or don't participate, and you simply can then reappoint another one. I would take on this kind of thing, the problem of appointing somebody would be to find somebody, in this case, who really has the time. There'd be lots of people, some that might even be the most qualified, but which would just simply have to tell you, I can't do it this year because I got to go home and make a living, rather than spend time in Washington. It is rather lopsided with the executive, but I felt that we did not want to be invading his prerogative. I very much believe within the bill that you should, that the executive should be the driving force in getting the most precise package together. I debated in my mind how that should be shaped, but I think because he is one of the few parties that can get his position together. I think we all saw in the Cook and the Land swap, when you put something that complex in the legislature, where the governor put his position in here and said, okay, you guys approve it or disapprove it, when it's so complex with different land arrangements in different areas, why this 60-member body would be all over the ballpark. But unless the governor's package is extremely offensive, and I personally, some parts of the governor's package, D2, I'm a little concerned about, but by and large, I think he's tried to innovate. He's tried to come up with some new thinking and some new ideas.
The issue that the D2 lands is going to be one that's going to be striking us right smack in the face before we know it. And at first, my first reaction to the bill was, why don't we delegate this responsibility to the Federal State Land Use Planning Commission? I rethought it, and it seems to me that the governor has developed a position, and you're right. I don't necessarily agree with all portions of that. For that position, there are 7, 8, 9 other positions, I believe, that have been developed by various by the Congress. I think Congressman Young has a position. I think one regional corporation indicated in testimony in this committee that they have developed a position that they're going to be asking to be submitted as a part of a legislative intent in Congress. And I think we're going to have a lot of that activity before us too. I think some other splinter group is going to devise a method by which that national interest land ought to be used and how it's to be managed. And since we have found a lot of people very much disturbed about how land in Alaska is going to be managed and whether or not it's in the best interest of the state not to have a broad voice. Maybe this is a vehicle to do it. I'm still...
Mr. Chairman, it would be very easy to wait until the horse is almost out of the barn, especially for people who do not exactly have to take a position. A legislative body and its memberships can often avoid taking a position on something. It doesn't mean it was the correct thing to do. Once the fences go up around the land, we all react. And of course, those fences remain often unchangeable. And I think that's a tendency, too, just to stand back and be the critic of somebody on the bad parts of this package, failing to recognize the very good things that may be in that package. I think we're going to need every structure we have back working before the Congress. In some cases, we'll be working across purposes, but I'm not sure that'll be counterproductive. Only if the two go together, it's entirely positioned for the state to have its position, to develop a broader lobby group that takes another interest, also to fund up the Land Use Planning Commission when the time comes, and put them in a position of defending things as they see it. So I'm not sure in the end the Land Use Planning Commission might not have a lot of credibility, because after all they were created by the Congress for precisely this purpose. And they're the management judgment tool that was created. Then it's a little hard, I think, to throw away completely their findings, because that's very much conceding that environmental decisions, instead of setting up a judgmental tool to help referee them, it's back to the political forum, in which today the environmental interests may be, have a bit of their edge on occasion, but tomorrow it may be the development interests, depending on the sweep of public opinion.
Mr. Smith.
Mac, I'm sorry I wasn't here when you started. You may have covered this already, but I'm concerned about the function of this organization. Is it? Do you anticipate that it will develop an independent position, or does it lobby for one of the variety of opinions or positions that we'll have before us?
Ted, I talked about this, and I think it, number one, I indicated that I felt it was hard for anybody, you know, this legislature, anybody, something as broad and complex and controversial, to embrace one party's position. My feeling from the native interests has been, you know, we'll walk gently along with you and watch for a while. The Land Planning Commission's position may not, since it's federal state, not be completely synonymous with the states. There's another, perhaps slightly different position, or if there is dissension, their ability to function may be reduced. And this is a very feeble attempt at trying to define what we could put together to develop a lobbying front where people are basically in the same ballpark, although they may not be necessarily embracing the identical points in all cases. Plus one addendum thing, and that's that if you do have groups that have outrighter positions, you actually bring them back. Go ahead and let them have their say too, by giving a small grant to those groups, which a limit may be put on, which is a practice that hasn't been done in this country, but it has been done. Well, it's the principle of law, of course, in Berkeley, that the courts have been imposing for the last 15 years, that, you know, the lack of financial ability to present your position is the lack of ability to present your position in many cases.
I think maybe one of the things that concerns me is this language about the steering council shall develop a lobby effort to represent Alaska's interests before Congress, and that would seem to imply to me that the administration is either incapable of doing that or does not represent Alaska's interests. The same way with the Land Use Planning Commission. And we've got something, I recall in the budget presentation yesterday, we had $200,000 earmarked for a public forum of some sort. And that would seem to tie into this.
Perhaps, Ted, we should have just added an S to that word interest. Interest. We recognize in many cases, there is no singular interest, but there's a variety of interests which have to get into one consensus, but which may vary. The opposite of that, of course, is getting back to the Congress, and the state presents their position, and you have a number of other parties who are completely independent critics of that. I think the goal of the steering committee is to at least draw those into a working group where you develop as much consensus as you can, so that as your adversary opinion probably when the Congress ends up being much less, because as those people work with you or work with a common steering effort, that the state may even modify its position in certain cases to accommodate those things. Or they may realize there is not as much difference between their position and the state's position, and vice versa. But when those groups remain very distant until the day they walk before the Congressional Committee, there's not much hope of dialogue. I think, you know, number one, looking at the governor's package, I think it's very interesting, very innovative. And while it interests me in many cases, I can't help, as a political person, being, well, wait a minute, there's a lot that's new there. You know, I want to keep it just out there and look at it for a while. And I think the governor himself feels that. There's a lot of new suggestion there. And I think as people get used to what's there, you know, the definition of what's there may change, as well as people's willingness to come in a little closer.
I agree. I think it's an interesting proposal, one we'll follow up on, but there's some weak spots in it, too.
Well, I indicated here that I had played with the idea simply asking to be laid aside because, and when we drafted it all over the ballpark, it's exactly what to do. We finally decided to simply start with something, so that was the end point. That's what happened. I'm anything but satisfied with the conception of how it works or what it can do, but simply feel that the D2 thing is about a year away. That somehow we have a responsibility for doing something in that area.
Any other questions?
I just like to make a comment or so. Of course, some of the problems in Alaska, we'll say starting even with statehood or the advent of statehood, was actually promoted by, we'll say, groups of people, independent groups of people. I know they chartered DC-4s at that time, or maybe equivalent, to go to Washington in the interest of statehood. And this has been done in the interest of getting the pipeline going. I think it was done in the interest of the Indian native land claims. But do you really think, Mr. Speaker, that the state itself will have a big voice in the selection of these D2 lands, or do you think Congress are just going to ride roughshod and do what they want to?
Well, if we lay down and die,
we have no... I see your attitude.
Mr. Rhodes, I think that the Congress was somewhat unclear. I think in most Congresses know exactly what they were doing and intended with the D2 section. And clearly, I think there's been a development in the Congress where environmental issues found they had very little voice for decades in the past. Then, and they were advocates at that time of developing things like land use planning commissions, all the judgmental tools that would allow a little temperance back and forth from the public opinion sweeps. Well, then the tide changed a bit, and I think environmental issues became very strong within the Congress. And I think at that point, being a little critical of environmental interests, but perhaps they were being very politically practical, they threw away a lot of the judgmental tools and said, wait a minute, it's our time. Let's make sure that we use the political mechanism while we can. But I think very much they recognize that, you know, people have to eat, there's economic problems, and that it's very prudent on their part to reinforce the former judgmental tools which they advocated. Therefore, I think the findings of the Land Use Planning Commission and others will not be completely disregarded. And if we do a mature job, we just don't come back and say, blindly, we don't want to play at all. This is what we want. Why are you treading upon us? I think that's the message Senator Gravel and Senator Stevens was giving us. No longer can we come back to the Congress, have a hand, or just plead our uniqueness or anything else. We'll come back and be respected because we're persuasive, maybe because we're right, and because we're well prepared and have our ducks behind us, exactly as we did in statehood and a few other of the fundamental issues, which also were well supported by public funding.
This legislation, the concept, really has some merit because I think the decision on these D2 lands is one of the biggest decisions Alaska is going to be confronted with, because it's going to affect the lives of a lot of people in the next 100 years, I suppose.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Osborne.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker. You said that groups, that small groups, independent groups that don't have money. Now, I understand there's $200,000 for this. Would that money go to this council?
The money would go to the council, and I would assume that a lot of that money would be used for, when the time came, doing some planning, getting people together. There would also be money available for going back and forth to Washington if you developed a lobby group. And that that probably what should be done in an appropriation is that there should be a certain amount lined out for grants. So, and that would put the umbrella on how much grant money.
So, if somebody wanted to go from a different group, he could get in. Just seven members could take him back to Washington. Is that the way you figured?
Well, a group would, you know, present their position, and it would be viewed as being in disparity enough with the state that they wish to make their case.
But the grant would be made to that group.
Yeah.
The council right. would go back.
No, you right. simply the grant would be made to the group. They might get $10,000, which would also maybe they could hire some professional people to help develop their information. And again, the challenge is to them. They have a little of the wherewithal that says you better get your information because you have some of the means rather than just appearing unprepared. And I think that's what softens people's positions. Suddenly, when they're challenged that you know, you're just not coming off the street, and I'm sitting here and I make my rhetoric down the table about, you know, you're treading on free enterprise or some other diatribe, and I get up and leave. And but when you're given the wherewithal and expected to have the ability to present information, you very much ask that person, you know, where are your findings? Where is your information? Why haven't you developed it?
Mike, did you say you were asking for $200,000?
There's a $200,000 appropriation with it, which really doesn't need to be effective this year. They just put the legislation in.
It needs to be effective in the fiscal year, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it would need to be effective in part. I'm not sure how much money they would spend next year. I wouldn't think they would spend that much.
Do you feel that secure in this bill being just as is, or
no?
Be going before, get out of this committee, and from this committee it goes back to rules, is that right?
Finance.
Oh, yeah.
I think my feeling finally was to put it in here and say that, you know, I've rattled it around and slapped it on the table, and so now it's somebody else's opportunity to see maybe if. We bounce these ideas off each other and come up with some more acceptable parameters within the bill.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? No,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So what is the wish of the committee on this?
I'd like to suggest the language on line 21.
What is the
make the sentence starting after duties on line 20 to read, the steering council shall develop a lobby effort to accurately represent the range of Alaska's interests.
After steering council, a lobby effort.
Accurately represent Alaska's
range. The range of Alaska's interests, plural, before Congress.
What would that word range mean then?
It recognizes the fact that there is not one position that they're going to be lobbying for, that everybody gets a shot at.
Just the one word you changed it.
Well, I included accurately before represent to accurately represent the range of Alaska's interests. Move and ask unanimous consent to adopt that amendment.
Is there any objection to the motion to adopt the amendment? The words being accurately represent the range of, and deleting the word.
No, we don't delete anything, we just add it. Make interest plural.
Right. And Alaska's interests before Congress. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the amendment is adopted. Representative Huntington, you had some concerns about the makeup of the, or the appointments of the steering council. Do you have any recommendations?
I wonder, Mr. Smith, you weren't here when I was objecting.
Yeah, I heard that before I left, Jimmy. It was just out for a little while.
Being sure this is going to be a pretty busy council, I don't see that the House of Representatives, the person in the House of Representatives, have an adequate enough time to sit down in this council and do the job he's going to do. And appointing a member from the House and a member from the Senate, I would see a Senate appointing a person at large and a House appointing a person at large. This actually, as I'm an independent candidate, would be discriminating against me actually anyway in the first place. Whereas a member at large, appointing a member at large for the consensus of the House, they get the consensus of the House and consensus of the Senate. So.
Well, I don't see how you could, you know, make the statement that the Speaker of the House would discriminate against you because you're an independent. Are you saying you're independent, he won't choose you?
I don't belong to either party.
I think
the party is a political appointment. There's no doubt about that. You can see that. But if it's a Democratic House, they're going to put a Democratic person in. If it's a Republican House, they're going to put a Republican in there.
Well, yes, that could be, but you're probably the prime candidate because you are independent.
I wish that was a thinking of time. I don't think you'll find that.
I think maybe Jimmy has a good point here, and we could perhaps achieve that by deleting on line 12 the words of the House of Representatives and on line 13 of the Senate. So the language would then read one member appointed by the Speaker and one member appointed by the President. That would give the latitude to appoint somebody from the House or somebody at large as
I would feel much better with that language.
Move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
But to delete the one member appointed of the House of Representatives on line 12 and to delete on line 13 of the Senate.
Right.
Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion to delete on line 12 of the House of Representatives on line 13 of the Senate is adopted. Okay. Is there anything else in the bill that, or is there anyone here that would like to testify on the bill? Resolution to come on.
Let's move her out, do pass.
Motion on the floor to move out to the do pass recommendation. If there's no objection to the motion, the motion is adopted.
No problem.
Okay. There'll be a committee substitute, is that the?
Yes. No, it goes to finance, let's just send it out amended.
That's amended, okay.
They can do a substitute out there.
We'll do that. Okay, we have Representative Byrne here who would like to speak on House Bill number 911. There was no objection. I knew I said we've got a quorum and some of the checks.
We don't have time to read on.
One of these.
Hey, there's only three words on the bill now. What are you gonna use all this?
I have one back too. Oh. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 911 was put in actually by request of an individual who apparently felt that in the process of establishing a home site, or a T&M site, up in what has subsequently become one of our parks, that they probably suffered some injustice due to lack of legislation which allowed them to regain some of the monies which went into capital improvements. I don't know the individual. The materials which are being passed around to you was given to me, and I had told them that if they could send substantially the material, I would have a bill put in if at all possible. Mr. Cahill of the State Parks apparently has more knowledge of this, and I had written to him telling him the bill was in, asking if he would look it over, could come down with further information as to whether there was anything to substantiate the individual's remarks, who we see as you read the letters here, or if there were other cases of this type, and if indeed we had anything to worry about whatsoever. The attorney who has written most of these letters for the Cornells has indicated that this, in his estimation, is an inequity and that there is a possibility of others. In this particular case, the gentleman had a T&M site and also a home site inside of what is now apparently the Denali State Park, and was incapable of proving up to the satisfaction to the district court because of the moving of the highway and several other things, although as near as I can gather, he was given patent to his land. And then later on, as I can gather, he was not given the authority to sustain this. He feels that there's a substantial amount of money put into it, and he's questioning whether the state should repay for the effort at the time, and especially for those things which he feels are of value to the state after they take the land. Now that's the case. I'm not here to debate his case, because I don't know the gentleman. All I know is that there's a feeling that this may happen to others. The bill addresses a problem of, should the Department of Natural Resources compensate private individuals for the value of improvements made on federal land, subsequently patented to the state and incorporated into state parks?
Are there any questions of Representative?
There's a great deal of information here which the attorney had sent down. Started back with Keith Miller and some of the others who have verified that the individual did prove up in good faith.
This letter he sent you, huh?
Yes. I do feel, Mr. Speaker, that, or Mr. Chairman,
could
that
we,
if indeed, yes, that if indeed there is an inequity of this sort happening, if we are putting so much land into state parks, and people are suffering a considerable amount financially, that it should be looked into. I'm not sure that we can look into it without Mr. Cahill's testimony. I wrote to him about 5 days ago after the bill was put in, asking him to get me that information if at all possible.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a form right now, but I would like to delay this here for a day or two. Try to find out something about it.
That actually would be my preference, would be that we would, I asked the legislative affairs to do some research on this, and the best they could do is one of the letters which came back, which indicated how much the individual felt he had put into the land. And I think it's the very last part of the material which I have.
Has anyone else taken a look at that figure to see whether or not that is a reasonable?
No. I think we would have to have Mr. Cahill. He apparently is familiar with this particular case. He also, when I mentioned it to him, I got the impression that he felt there were some inequities that could be taken care of, not just for this case, but for others that might exist. And I think that we shouldn't go too far with it until we have the opportunity for him to testify.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Smith.
I'm generally familiar with this problem. Mr. Cornell talked to me on the subject some years back. At that time, he hadn't had a final decision from the court. My hang-up at this point is that he had to comply with federal law and federal regulations in order to acquire title to this property. The fact is that he was unable to do so. I don't know why, but having done that, if the land was not in a state park, it would be open to homesteading. A private party could acquire free title to it, a fee title. And I'm not sure that the state should be responsible for making him whole in the face of his inability to have the federal government do that. Once property is patented to the state, it becomes free and clear, and I don't really think the state has any, well, I know it doesn't have any legal obligation to try to correct any federal mistakes or errors in the transfer of that patent. We may well have a moral obligation to do so. There may be an injustice here that we have to cure, but like Jimmy, I think we need more information than we presently have available to us.
My feeling, too, is that maybe a question. Has this been pursued by our congressional delegation, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge.
Do you believe it would be helpful if we were to compile what evidence we have here, get a determination from the, say, from the Attorney General, perhaps?
Yes, and I have a great deal of knowledge. I don't have the knowledge. I have inside the materials.
I can
get them to them, and certainly could find out more information, I think, within a few days.
Yeah, we'd certainly appreciate that, and I would tend to agree with the assessment of Representative Smith that when land is transferred, it is assumed that the land is free and clear of any encumbrances, and that the general feeling is that there are no obligations that must be honored by the state of Alaska once that transfer is executed. And I'd like to look into this just a little bit more.
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to turn this material over to any particular person, or would you?
I'd like to have it for the committee, and also have our staff do further investigation on it.
Mr. Chairman, this particular chunk lies in that area where, I don't remember if we talked about it at the committee at whole or just talked with individual members, where we should probably consider eliminating some property from Denali Park. It's basically all private property along the highway there, and the only reason I haven't introduced a bill to do that to date is the fact that there's still adjudication going on in the area. And so it's difficult to define the boundaries area we're talking about while it's still under adjudication. But this is in that area that probably should be removed from the park, and that's something we might want to keep in mind down the road, too.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a must. I know it's a much bigger problem than just this one person. This just happened to be one. I think it's a problem which has to do when we're establishing our parks, how some inholdings are handled and so forth.
I don't really think so, Ellen. I think so. The problem is the transfer of title from federal to state, and you know.
Well, maybe we're saying the same thing. I'm sorry.
It shouldn't pertain just to parks, you know. There are some statutes already on the book that have to do with administrative oversight by the federal government, things like that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll hand
this
over to you.
There is a suggested change to the language. I don't know if you've got a copy of that.
No.
The suggested change would be to add new language, not to just refer specifically to state parks, but to recreation areas and other special purposes purpose area under this chapter. And then if the improvements were made in good faith, cannot be removed or can be used in the operation of the state park, recreation area or other special purpose area under this chapter, it would extend the and broaden the application of your suggested legislation.
I would certainly have no objection to that.
I think that would be a good change.
Mr. Chair,
we'll hold this for further consideration, and as we gather more information, the idea of Mr. Van Dorn being that
we're going to gather as much information as we can on the bill, I mean, on the bill and the information in the background. And if you could get together with Mr. Van Dorn.
I'll do that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Develop a position.
Before we put out on this bill, I'd like to have Mr. Hale either write the history of the case or appear before the committee on the bill.
Very good. We can, we'll try to make those arrangements. If you can't be here, we'll try to get, we'll ask him to submit a letter for us then.
I think we should also ask for a map of the property and the location of improvement and the status of it.
The status plan of the area. Very good. We have one other bill that was before the committee this morning. It was House Concurrent Resolution Number 129 relating to the exchange of land in Alaska.
Resources Committee introduced this at my request, secondhand, but at the request of the university. There's several park and recreation areas around the state where university lands are included. The desire of the university is to have these lands exchanged, exchanged outside for other lands, and that the lands then become general selection lands inside the boundaries of the designated areas. You know, it says recreation, wildlife, recreation, critical habitat areas. Parks, recreation, critical habitat areas. This is a resolution that would urge the Department of Natural Resources to exercise authority. It already has to do that statement of legislative intent. The trust land of the university as to the schools is designated for support of the university and the schools, and this would say that it's the intention of the legislature that those lands be reserved for that purpose rather than being reserved for park or recreation purposes.
Is that it?
That's it.
That's it. Well, we really can't take any action now. We've really lost our numbers here. But we'll take, what we could do is, I think, first thing tomorrow morning, take this up. Item of business along with House Bill 888 go into the critical habitat areas and refuges that are on schedule for tomorrow. Being nothing further for the committee, then we'll adjourn till tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.